Are you looking for ways to be a better you every day? Has travel assisted your healing journey? I'm Jackie Roby, Chief Excellence Officer of Inspired Journey Consulting and your host for Through Inspired Eyes. Travel is one of the tools I use to overcome trauma. As a sales strategist and diversity, equity, inclusion advocate, I work with healing travel businesses to amplify their voices. It is my mission to grow emotional intelligence, promote healing, and ultimately create a kinder, more inclusive world. I'm grateful to have you here. Hello, and welcome to Through Inspired Eyes. This episode is sponsored by Sire Travel. Travel can be stressful, but it doesn't have to be. Sire Travel is your secret weapon for stress-free travel. Find out more at siretravel.com. That's siretravel.com. In today's episode, we're going to talk about a different type of trauma, oppression. I'm going to tell you immediately that I may not say everything perfectly, so please allow me some grace here. But what I do promise is that I'll speak from the heart. So I have a question for you. A few, actually. First, do you consider yourself racist? What about prejudice? Or do you see yourself as kind and accepting? It's natural to want to see ourselves in the best light. It's human nature to look at those around us, our family and friends, and to look for the best in people. I always considered racism to be the extremes of society, those that spewed hate and violence. And I honestly didn't think you could be prejudiced if you were a minority. How far I've come. But what it took me decades to learn is that I was brought up to be all of this. Racist, prejudiced, kind and accepting. You see, I was raised with what I knew as the facts. My sisters and I are 8 nationalities. 4 from mom, 4 from dad, 2 religions, practicing neither, and white. I distinctly remember this conversation that my dad and his sister were having, where she said he wasn't white, she wasn't white, we weren't white, that we were Latinos or Hispanics, whatever the term was in the 80s. And my dad adamantly disagreed and said, no, we were white. Now, thinking of the checkboxes on government forms, my dad's argument made sense to me. You're either black, white, or Asian, right? Out of those choices, white sounds accurate. I wonder, which box would you choose for yourself? Or would you reject being placed in those boxes altogether? Okay, now little Jackie knows that she's white. I know all other parts of me only apply to the food we make or the music my grandparents and great aunties play. What about language? Why don't we know Spanish? Well, for one, my dad never learned the language, even though his parents are fluent. Listen, it seems strange, but I never questioned it. Or if I did, I received my answer and the case was closed. We weren't taught Spanish, other than a few words here and there and whatever was taught in school. In fact, my maiden name is Royo, but I didn't learn to roll my R's until 8th grade Spanish class. And as you can hear, I'm still not great at it. You know, Latinx people used to tell me that I mispronounced my own surname. That was so embarrassing. I'm sure my dad had his reasons. I get it. Parenting is hard. I'm a stepmom to a tween, and I know that the big picture decisions and everyday small choices, they're just not always easy. Most people really want what's best for their kids. I'm empathetic to my parents. Truly, my heart is filled with love for both of them. They had 3 kids by their mid-20s. 3 girls. Ugh, that is unimaginable to me as I'm here navigating motherhood going into my 40s. Somehow, somewhere in this story, it was decided that our lives would be easier if we were white. But denying pride for our ancestry was damaging. I don't know. Maybe my dad was called prejudiced names or told to go back to his country. Maybe he only saw financial success in white people, recognized unconscious bias, but didn't have a name for it, and adapted our lives to fit the majority. Because it's difficult to imagine a life of abundance for yourself without seeing it in people who look like you. The roots of this systemic oppression run deep. So deep that questioning this angers my Latino dad and it offends my white mom. Even as recent as a year ago, they sent text messages on the subject that were riddled with exclamation points. Message received. We don't talk about race, privilege, who sits or sat in the White House, or any of these uncomfortable subjects. But wouldn't it be more comfortable if we did talk through it? Can't we have the conversation without judgment? My sisters, they can both pass as white, and yet have always felt Latina. They move with joy to the music of our people. They use my grandmother's recipe for coquito each holiday. They even joined Spanish clubs in college and continue to find ways to connect with community today. But I have my dad's skin color, so I need to be buttoned up. I actually have a visceral reaction to Spanish music. It makes me that uncomfortable. Probably because people expect me to know the language, know the dance moves, and feel at home in the rhythm. And I'm embarrassed that none of that is true. Give me hip hop any day, okay? It would have been helpful to understand what it meant to be Latina. I knew I had an olive complexion and could get a deeper tan than my sisters and mom. But I didn't know that body shape played a part. We talked about genetics and size, often, actually, but not shape. I have what would be considered an hourglass figure, but I didn't see it that way. I saw my thighs that looked different than everyone else, even my sisters and mom. My parents used to say that one sister looked like my dad, the other sister looked like my mom, and I looked like my grandfather. Talk about feeling out of place. Not to mention, I was being physically compared to the man that abused me, but I digress. The term white privilege, it was never spoken in my home. But as you can see, my upbringing shows that the power possessed by the color of your skin is important. I didn't understand this until my 30s, and I'm still unraveling the pieces. So I want to ask all of you, did you grow up hearing about white privilege? When I put all of this together, what I see is shame. We are made to feel ashamed to be anything other than white. It was buried deep in my family, this need to change ourselves to fit in. How will society accept us, hire us, promote us? Do they want the bilingual man who is proudly Latino? Or do they prefer the tan guy who makes his white colleagues comfortable drinking Budweiser instead of Modelo and laughing at racist jokes? Which box should we choose? When I met David, the love of my life, he challenged everything I'd been told. You're not white, Jackie. I was confused. He taught me about race, white privilege, and what it means to be a person of color. We talked about white privilege, and I argued that point with him like my life depended on it. I was offended by the word privilege, only equating it with affluence. And I did not grow up with money, so how dare he use that word? I debated with David, trying to persuade him to change his perspective. Can you imagine? I thought, racism only exists in extremists. In my now apparent ignorance, I at that time thought he made up the term white privilege. Seriously, that's how little I knew, which is part of my privilege. Looking back on these conversations, I am surprised and grateful that he met me where I was, kept the conversation going, and still loved me more each day. The way I was raised isn't uncommon. In fact, in his book, How to Be Anti-Racist, Ibram X. Kendi speaks to being a black man that was raised anti-black. Chris Rock, who I love, makes a joke about this in his stand-up, referencing how he loves black people and the differences in perspectives within the black community. I love stand-up. Like I said, I love Chris Rock, but I do not have the right to quote this particular joke, so it's not going to sound funny coming from me. All I'm going to say is it fits. Hey there, inspired travelers. I'm interrupting this program for a brief commercial break. Question: does selling make you feel uncomfortable? And have all the pandemic restrictions made you weary of talking about your wellness or healing travel business? I am so excited to share that Inspired Journey Consulting now has one-on-one coaching services to help ease the stress and teach you 4 key tips to direct pent-up travel demand to ultimately increase your revenue. As a sales strategist and social media amplifier, I help my clients set achievable goals to effectively impact their bottom line, work with Inspire Journey Consulting to develop authentic messaging, get insight from an experienced sales professional, and drive revenue to your wellness travel business. Visit InspireJourneyConsulting.com and look for Coaching with Care under the Services menu. Schedule a complimentary consultation call today. Looking forward to connecting. Now, I'm going to tell you something that embarrasses me to my core. Honestly, I've sat on this episode for weeks trying to determine whether I would share this, but it's important, and transparency is a core value of mine. So deep breath. Here we go. Growing up, my sisters and I were told that if we ever dated a black man, we would be disowned. And to me, this seemed normal. All I had to do was follow the rules. I'm good at that. Now, the same aunt who argued our status as white brought a black man home as her date for Thanksgiving one year. And because of that, my sisters and I were forbidden from celebrating the holiday with our family as we always did. I remember thinking my aunt was breaking the rules. It was her fault I couldn't be at the party. But then at the same time, feeling like my parents were overreacting. None of it made sense to me. Looking back, this is the first memory I have of clear racism in my family. And unfortunately, not the last. Fast forward 25 years, where I fall madly in love with a black man. When we met, I didn't expect this love. I rarely dated black men because I knew the family rule, follow rules. And I fought way too hard to keep the peace all these years and stay in this family. I wasn't going to risk it over a romantic relationship that could fall apart. But just 17 days into our courting, I knew I wanted to spend the rest of my life with him. And yes, this is the man I married and am happily with today. One of the toughest moments in the beginning of our relationship was having to tell David that being with him could mean that I was disowned. It was mortifying to say this to such an incredible human being who did nothing wrong. All he did was love me. Actually, that's an understatement because his love is the most beautiful thing I've ever experienced. And isn't it an ironic scenario? Here was this man that loved me unconditionally, and I was fearing the loss of a family that showed their love was conditional. I was terrified for my parents to find out that this person I'd been gushing over was the very race they had forbidden. In fact, I put a strategy in place, how to ease them into the conversation, where they could fall in love with him before ever seeing what he looked like. Of course I put a strategy together, right? I'm a strategist. This is what I do. So like the planner I am, I execute it smoothly. I'm thankful to say that my parents were accepting, loving, and grateful that I met somebody who loved me the way I deserved. My dad talked about his own growth over the years, and that really opened up opportunities for us to be closer. But just as I got comfortable in this inclusive family, it came time to bring David and my future stepdaughter, Love, to Colorado, where many of my relatives were still living. I wanted to introduce them and have those picture-perfect moments I always imagined. This is my future, and it was time to have my own family at these big gatherings. And that's when my godmother broke my heart. She told us we weren't welcome in her home. In our email correspondence, she wrote these words. "This is not something that my husband would advocate. I'm not really on board with it either. Not for you, of course. I would never dream of telling you how to live your life. And I'm happy that you found someone that makes you happy. Just for my own children, I can't accept it. It just isn't something that they're surrounded by. I hope you understand. I don't want to hurt your feelings." Now here was racism thrown in my face towards the man that changed my world for the better, and his 7-year-old daughter, an innocent child. Unbeknownst to Love, the first act of racism was delivered to her by my blood relative. I was devastated and mortified and angry. Staying quiet was not an option. I replied, calling this out for what it was. While I was polite, as I always am, my message was clear. I said to her, "While I appreciate your honesty, you told me that my family isn't welcome in your home because of the color of their skin. I know you want me to tell you everything is okay and I understand, but it's not, and I don't. No matter her response, I needed to use my voice to stand against intolerance. Nobody was going to treat my people that way. This was wrong. It made no sense. You know that I've been waiting to meet this love, and how do you not want to know them? But true to the deep roots of unconscious bias, this didn't sit well. And the woman that I looked up to my entire life countered with this, and I quote, "Encountering a biracial couple and being friendly and civilized is one thing. Having it in your family is something else. It's something that we disagree with. I can almost guarantee that your friends would probably not wish it for their children. We feel that if you're here with them, then it appears to our kids that we condone what you're doing." This happened in 2015. This isn't the early 1900s, the 60s, or whenever people say racism died. This is still being taught to children today. One of my favorite books that opened my eyes in such a profound way was Why I'm No Longer Talking to White People About Race by Renee Edo Lodge. And she tells this story that will just break your heart. She writes, "When I was 4, I asked my mom when I would turn white, because all the good people on TV were white, and all the villains were black and brown. I consider myself to be a good person, so I thought that I would turn white eventually." My mom still remembers the crestfallen look on my face when she told me the bad news. Can you imagine? If you can't, that's part of your privilege. We have an opportunity to teach our children to be better. But children's books are a great example of white privilege. Ever try looking for a book with people of color as the main characters? It's a short list. What about the ones with marginalized voices as the main characters that aren't talking about their differences? I know how important representation is, especially for children. So when I traveled for business, I would try to get Love a book from each destination. I wanted her to see herself in these pages while she mentally traveled to London, Chicago, and Paris. But searching those bookshelves, looking for black or brown children was a bleak exercise. We can do better, and we need to do better. Sharing these personal stories, they're not meant to shame people. Though to be quite honest, they should be ashamed. I'm extremely ashamed for buying into this for so long and perpetuating a cycle of hate. My father was able to grow and change to a certain extent. I love that about him. My godmother is another story. But this isn't about me or my experiences. It's about holding up a mirror to impact change. We all have unconscious bias, and we can all learn how to be more inclusive. We can only just be better. Last year, Carol Cox of the Speaking Your Brand podcast challenged her listeners to choose women's voices. This created mindfulness around the messaging we take in. Think about it. Are the books you read or the podcasts you listen to primarily voiced by men? Have you paid attention to that at all? Have you read anything by someone in the trans or Latinx community? We received recommendations of work created by women, women of color, trans women, and other intersectionalities through this challenge. And doing this changed how I choose books, podcasts, businesses to support, and everything in between. It's episode 162 of the Speaking Your Brand podcast if you're interested in learning more. I believe the resources are still available when you sign up too. One of my personal and professional missions is to fully understand what inclusive wellness looks like. To do this, I'm being intentional about the information I take in and the people I surround myself with. I'm actively having conversations with those who are different from me and those who are similar. Remember, I have no idea what it means to be a Latina. I want to learn from all of you, so please connect with me to share your story. The Travel Can Heal campaign is a great way to do that. The link is in the show notes for you. As I record this today, it's the day before my 40th birthday. I'm bearing my soul to you, releasing this shame, and owning my own contribution to the ugliness. I'll move into the next decade a better ally, a louder voice, and continue this journey as a student of inclusion. In the next few episodes, you'll hear from extraordinary travel professionals who are positively impacting the world with diversity, equity, and inclusion. Thank you for listening today and always. If you enjoy the podcast, please subscribe, leave a review, and share on social media. You can tag me on Instagram at Inspire Journey Consulting and I'll reshare with gratitude. Until next time, stay inspired. Thank you for joining Through Inspired Eyes. Don't forget to subscribe to this podcast and join the Travel Can Heal Challenge. Go to inspiredjourneyconsulting.com/travelcanheal to learn more. Until next time, stay inspired.